Aristotle starts off. It says by Davar Hashem Moshe Lim or Davar Alam Vamarti about Los Chas and Eros Amol Panam and Ori Yerushalaf and Eros. Right? When you light up the candles, you should do it toward the middle of the menorah. All the lights, every single one of the lights, should be lit toward the middle of the menorah itself. That's how it has to be lit. Now, it says the words. Thank you. Don't worry about it. But that is that. But the pasuk says Imdu v'eshma'al by in over here regarding Moshe Rabbeinu. Imdu v'eshma'al, stand up and I will listen. Stand up and I will listen. Now what happened was like this: at Pesach Sheni there were a bunch of people that were sitting by the Korban Pesach and they said, "Why in the world can't we bring the Korban Pesach? Well, because we're tameh. Just because we're tameh, we can't bring the Korban Pesach. That's ridiculous. I don't want to hear that. I don't want that to be whatsoever. I want to bring the Korban Pesach." So the tameh people went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Stand up here. Stand. Wait right here. I'm going to go listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say to me, and I'll come back to you, and I'll tell you what God tells me." That's got to be awesome. Can anybody get up and say, "Give me 5 minutes, I got to talk to God, and I'll be right back"? Is there anybody that ever did? I'm sorry? No, there's no one. There's no one who has that except for Bilam. Bilam was on the same level of Moshe Rabbeinu in some way, shape, or form. But Imdu v'Eshma'al was this idea. This is the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and every other Navi in the world. Every other Navi in the world only spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Hashem called out to them and said, "This is what I want." However, this Navi, Moshe Rabbeinu, was able to do it whenever he asked. He could go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "I want to speak to you." He was guaranteed an answer, unlike everything else. Not even Yoshua. We all know Yoshua was so great. Yoshua, the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not even Yoshua was able to come to this level to be guaranteed an answer. There's a Gemara in Temura, Tes Zayin of an Aleph, that mentions that Moshe told Yoshua, at the end of his life, he said, "I'm dying. You can ask me any question you want." Can you imagine that? Moshe Rabbeinu saying to you, "Anything you want, ask me right now. Ask me anything, and I'll answer for you." And Yoshua said an unbelievable line. He said, "The pasuk says about me that I never left your tent. I was with you at all times. I never left your side, Moshe Rabbeinu. There's never a second that I wasn't there." So he said, "What is there that I don't know? What could possibly have happened that I don't know about?" That's what he told them. "What could possibly have happened that I don't know about? I know everything you know." Moshe Rabbeinu got upset. And he said, "Are you kidding me? There's nothing you could ask me?" Yoshua immediately lost 300 halachos, and he had 700 sfeikos, 700 doubts about things that he had had. And all of a sudden they came about. Then Esau wanted to kill him. They ran up and they wanted to kill Yoshua for losing all these halachos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yoshua, "I cannot tell you the halachos. It's impossible for me to tell you any of these halachos. Go busy them with war, get them involved with war, and they'll forget about everything." So what does that mean, as Rav Yaakov Kaminsky? What does it mean that you can't tell Yoshua the different halachos? Moshe Rabbeinu was able to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for anything, so why couldn't Yoshua ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for anything? And wasn't he correct? I mean, he never left the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu. He learned everything that Moshe Rabbeinu taught them. There wasn't anything that he didn't know. So what did you? I mean, Yoshua was telling the truth. It's not like he was bragging to his Rebbe. Imagine your Rebbe asks you that question. Anything you want, you could have. Anything you want. You're going to answer with such audacity and say, like, "I know everything you know, Moshe. There's nothing you can add on." Yoshua is speaking from the heart. He's saying, "Moshe, really, is there anything? I don't know anything. I don't know if there's anything that I've missed out from you. I've been there for everything." Yeah.
I would read it more like Moshe, he's saying, "Moshe, David, you prepared me to
become the leader." Very, very good. And that's seemingly a perfect line. What's wrong with that? Again, there's nothing wrong with that. Says Rav Yaakov, you know what he didn't learn? You know what he could have asked Moshe for? The concept called Yeridas Hadoros, where every generation goes down from Moshe Rabbeinu, every generation down is no longer as great. Yoshua will never be as great as Moshe, but let's not go individually. We're not going to go individually. There's something called Chasima Satzkufos. There are certain points where once we get past a certain area, you're no longer allowed to argue on the people that came before you. So for example, we say it in Pirkei Avos toward the beginning. Moshe Kivel Torah Misinai Umesara LiYoshua. Yoshua gave it to the Zekanim, Zekanim to the Nevi'im, the Nevi'im to Anshei Knesset Gedola, Anshei Knesset Gedola then gave it to the Tanoim, Tanoim then to the Amorayim to the Saborayim and the Gaonim, the Saborayim and the Gaonim to the Rishonim, and the Rishonim to the Achronim. And that's the levels that we're on today. We're now on the level of the Achronim. That's where we are today. What's custom with such kupos? So I can understand when we say the Tanoim ended, the era of the Tanoim ended when the Mishnayos were written. At the point where Rebbe Yehuda and Gatti got together and he put all the Mishnayos down, at that point we said you can no longer argue on Entanoim. Amoraim cannot argue on a Braisa. They cannot argue on a Mishnah. They now can explain the Mishnah, but they can't argue on a Mishnah. End of Amoraim, I get also. The end of Amoraim was by the times of the Gemara. That makes a lot of sense. The Amoraim ended right around that time. End of the Gaonim was when the Rith came along. The Rith ended the Gaonim, the Gaonic period, and by that time, once the Rith came along, then nobody can argue on the Gaonim that was all there. The end of the Rishonim is also somewhat understandable around the times of the Chassim of the Shulchan Aruch. Maybe a little bit earlier, maybe the Rush would be considered the end of the Rishonim, but the Shulchan Aruch would be a good time to have that. There are certain areas where you can pinpoint, you can say they can't argue on the generation before. There are certain people, and of course that generation could. It's the couple generations afterward. If I would get up and I would say, the Rambam's wrong. I don't have any clue where the Rambam was coming from. The Rambam worked full time as a doctor and wrote the Yad HaZaka on the side. He took all of Shas for the very first time and put it all together in a sefer, in a Likud sefer, with different headers, different chapters to be able to put everything together. And he pulled from you all the Yerushalmis, all the Gemaras, all the Midrashim, and said, here's the halacha by all these categories. That's ridiculous. Who in the world can do what the Rambam did? Who can even think of doing what the Rambam did? It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Should do what the Torah did? The Torah taking all of his father's Pirushim and putting them together in Arba Turim in four different categories? Who in the world can argue with that? That I totally understand. But Moshe and Yoshua? Yoshua was tremendous. Yoshua said to Moshe, I learned everything you learned. You were in the tent. I was in the tent. I was with you the whole time. There's no difference between me and you. That's what Yoshua understood. And this is what he missed out on. He was missing the concept of Indu V'eshma'a. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to go to a Kadosh Baruch Hu at any moment and say to Hashem, God, I need something. Moshe had that. Yoshua no longer did. Yoshua did not have, he was not privy to that type of relationship with God where he could just look up at God and say, God, this is what I want, can you get it for me? He no longer had that situation. That wasn't that. That was just for Moshe, no longer for any other person after that. So Hashem said to Yoshua, I can't tell you these lost halachos. That's not for me to do to you. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's era. That's not your era. Your era is something different. Your era is to be able to bring Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael and get them busy with war. Your era is not to have all the halakos. You are going to lose certain halakos, and you're going to have to paskin them based on a rove. Based on rove, basin, rove the people around. That's the way it's going to be. This is huge. It's the whole halakhic system being told over to Yoshua. You're starting the halakhic system of Klal Yisrael. It's no longer Moshe just asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, what do I want? It's Yoshua starting over everything completely different. Completely different. That's the concept. So what should Yoshua have done? What should he have done when Moshe Rabbeinu asked him that question? He should have said something so simple. And I know to us it seems simple. Yoshua had his reasons. He never thought there was such a concept to be read as a Doros. He was never told about it. He never assumed that he wouldn't be able to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything. He thought he was going to have the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. Here's what he should have said. He should have said, Rebbe, you know better than I do. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know much better than I do what I need. What is it that I'm missing? You tell me what I need to do. And then Moshe Rabbeinu would have told him, I'll tell you what you're missing. You're missing Indu V'Eshma'a. You'll no longer be able to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu something. That's it. And since he didn't do that, he didn't hear these halachos, and therefore he lost everything. Says Rav Yaakov. Rav Yaakov told over this verse. He said over this verse, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, when they were making a protest in New York, when New York was coming out with laws regarding certain types of autopsies, that autopsies were going to be required by all people who died in New York. And they had made a decision already, and the law was being passed through the government. So the Jews, the religious Jews, had made some sort of protest. I don't know the details behind this protest, and I don't know what year it was either. Somebody who was there maybe would be able to tell me. But when he said it, he got up and he said the following. He said over this drasha, and he said, it's mida connected mida. We feel like we can argue on the people in front of us. We feel that the people in previous generations were as great as them, and we can argue on them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us that were like animals in compared to the past generations. In B'nai Malachim, if they were angels, then we're like anashim. We're like men. And if they were men, then we're like donkeys. We're like donkeys, says the Gemara. And that's the idea behind the Chamorim. And not like the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Yair. No way, we're not like his donkey. We're like regular donkeys that don't eat truma and meiser and have things like that happen to us. That's the pshat. That's why Rav Yaakov said they're making these laws to cut us up after death. Because if we argue on them, then we become like animals. That's what ends up becoming. We HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to show us how lowly we really are. What an unbelievable line by Rabbi Yaakov, but that's another thing for another time. There are three punishments mentioned in this parsha, one after the other. Three of them, three in a row. Now it mentions it right in the middle, right after they go through these Yibin Sarum with the backwards nuns. You all see them, the backwards nuns that are faced backward. And the two punishments after Yibin Sarum are very obvious. They complained. They were complaining. It doesn't say what they complained about, but it says they complained. They were walking too fast. Are we there yet? Something like that, right? Their feet were hurting. That was the first complaint. And immediately a fire came out, consumed the edge of the camp. Some say it was the Sanhedrin. And then came another issue in which they said, oh, we've got to keep eating the man. We want to have meat. We want to have some meat. And again, they were punished with the slav. I know the slav sounds like it was a reward, but the slav killed some of the people, as it says, that they ate too much of it and they died. So that's what ended up happening. So that's punishment number two and punishment number three. Where's punishment number one? So the Gemara asks it. The Gemara asks it in a weird way. But it does say punishment number one was right before, and it says, by Yisu Mehar Hashem Derech Shloshes Yamin. They traveled away from Har Sinai. Does anybody have any idea where Har Sinai is nowadays?
No.
We have no clue. Does anybody take any pilgrimages there? We don't even know where it is. Does anybody have any Kedusha that has any Shechus to Har Sinai from that point forward? No. Not at all. What's Pshat? How do we not revere the place where we received the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How in the world does nobody remember it? How would they not go back year after year on Shavuot and say, you know what, we're going to learn Torah by the foot of Har Sinai? Why wouldn't they have done that? That sounds like such a Jewish thing to do. Bring cheesecake and sit down in the bottom of the mountain. Wouldn't that be such a simple thing to do? Why wouldn't anyone think of that? And it's never been done. It was never done. No one ever went back to Har Sinai. So the point came where we lost it. We lost it completely. We have no idea what it's all about. Eliyahu Navi, there's a question, right? That's already the question whether he said, right, what if he was inside the cave and that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him if he was on Har Sinai. But he never made a pilgrimage and made it holy again. There's nothing there. It's such a pella. What's going on with this? And where's the punishment? Where are they punished for running away from Har Sinai? Since they traveled away from Har Sinai, the Arum Brit Hashem Noseilat Man Der Shol Shidyam Lasula Menucha to go find the Menucha. Where's the punishment? You told me there's three punishments here. That's what the Medrash said. Three punishments. And we need by even so Arum to separate between the Paranos, separate between the punishments. But there's only two punishments. There was a fire, and the slav came and killed them. But it doesn't say anything that happened when they left Har Sinai. What's the punishment for leaving Har Sinai? What's the problem? And by even so Arum, that's cute. You take out the Sefer Torah. You're saying by even so Aaron. That's great. What in the world is that doing separating the different punishments? What does that have anything to do with what we're talking about over here? You could pick any two psukim. Why couldn't you just pick, and the son of Reuben is Elitzorvin Shteor? Put that in there. But it has to be this pasuk of even so on. What in the world is going on here? So Chassam Sofer classically says an unreal drasha. Unreal drasha all about this. By any other Avera, you do an Avera, let's say a person Chas V'Shalom doesn't put on tefillin in the morning. Chas V'Shalom doesn't put on tefillin. And he goes the whole day without putting on tefillin. He'll be punished, but it'll be in a punishment that it will come at some later point in time. Kadosh Baruch Hu will give you a chance to be able to do tshuva. He'll be able to let you work on it. He'll let you do something that eventually there is going to be a punishment. But there's a punishment that comes from that. Say a person does, I don't know, he breaks Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom, or something like that happens. There will be a punishment, but it happens at some point in time. It'll happen later on. Something will happen. Here, it's totally different. When you don't learn Torah, when you don't give the proper honor for the Torah, when you don't have Limud HaTorah together with you at all times, it's automatic. There's a scale. Says Pirkei Avos in Perek Gimel Mishnah Hay, that when we don't learn Torah, immediately we have the all of Derech Eretz. The yoke of the Malchus comes upon us. It's like a scale. You've got Torah on one side, you've got Derech Eretz on the other side. If you learn Torah, then you won't have to do Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz is defined as working, dealing with the government, everything like that. Anything else that comes with that. Anything like that. So Torah, the Derech Eretz goes up. But if you end up not learning Torah, then Torah goes up, That means Derech Eretz goes down. That means you have to work harder. That means you have to put more effort into your dealings with the government that deals with everything else. And it depends. If you do this and it goes up, it's an automatic scale. If you don't learn, it's automatically something will happen. I can tell you story after story of these strange places where people were learning, and because of that, it's just strange stories. They didn't have to go to the government offices for this. They didn't end up having to go to the court for that. They didn't ever end up having. They didn't have to go to a dentist for 6 years while they were in the midst of learning. Real stories about stuff like that, because that's the concept. That's what the whole thing stands for. That when you learn Torah, then the old Derech Eretz goes up, and it's automatic. That's there. That's the pshat. When they ran away from Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were immediately going to be punished. That the nations of the world were going to come and be meshaved them. They were going to take them over. Amalek was going to come back when they ran away from Har Sinai. Moab and Ammon were going to fight them right at that moment. Edom was going to get involved. The Pelishim were going to get involved. As soon as you stop learning Torah, as soon as you run away from Torah, it's automatic that the other nations take over. And Moshe Rabbeinu was worried. So the first thing he said, "Vayi ben Saron," as soon as the Aron traveled, "Vayomer Moshe, Kum Hashem v'yafutzoi vecha, scatter your enemies. V'yanusim esenach mipanecha, get rid of all of them." That's what he's worried about. He's worried about the other nations of the world taking over, because that's the automatic punishment for not learning Torah. So you don't have to mention any punishment in the pasuk. It's automatic. When you don't learn Torah, that's what ends up happening to you. That's what he understood, and he was worried about that. That's why David So was put over here. And then it just says, so why backward nuns? Why do you have backward nuns? I mean, we always have pays and samachs in the middle that divide up the parshas. You never have a nun. So why nun, and then why backward? So then it just says, that we're going to give two answers. Samachs over, and then it says, you know the famous one, right? Why backward nun? The Balaturim? Balaturim is the obvious one. Go back, count back 50 parshas, 50. Take that nun and go backward. From the second nun, right over here, just count backward. Count every pay and samach all the way back to see where it takes you. It's going to bring you to the middle of Bamidbar. If you go 50 parshios back, right when they start to travel, and it mentions right when the Arun travels in between the Degalim. In between the Degalim, when the Arun traveled, that's what happened. At that point, that's when he said, "Vayi ben Saron, Baramosha." So the term says it belongs 50 parshios earlier. So it's a backwards nun. Worked out really well. Can you imagine it was 48 parshios earlier? You know, backwards memchas. Nobody would have any clue what's going on. It's much easier this way. That's what ends up happening with the 50 nun. That's the Balaturim. But then it Siv says it's to separate. If you look in the Gemara and Shabbos, Chutzah Zayin Amud Beis says the following. It says, what was the second punishment? The Gemara answers, the Mizonim, the complainers. What was the first punishment? They ran away from Har Sinai. Everybody asked on the Gemara. I don't understand. Why do you ask about the second one first? You should have said, what's the first punishment? And say they traveled away from Har Sinai. What's the second punishment? Then he's owning it. Why are you going backward? Why are you doing that? And the answer is that them running away from Har Sinai was for a reason. You know, like, you're sitting in a car, and you have, I don't know if you have kids in the back seat, but you had, either you were a kid, or you had little brothers in the back seat, and like the whole time you're thinking, I wish you were there already. I wish you were there already. I wish you were there already. But you don't say that immediately. You don't like drive out of the driveway of your house and immediately say, are we there yet? Obviously you're not there. You're not going to say it yet, right? But you want to be there, so you immediately start thinking, oh, I wish we were there. I wish we were there. I wish we were there. Then, 100 miles into it, that's when you start going on, are we there yet? That's where it actually comes out. Because when you're in the midst of a complaining mode, and I will tell you that I've never traveled in a car with an iPod. So I don't know how many movies I probably would have watched had I been in a car with my father while he was taking us on a big trip. I would assume that that changes things a lot. But it used to be, there was no such thing as watching movies while you were traveling, so it was boring. And all you could look at were cows. And if there were no cows, then there's grass or soy. And there's nothing cool about grass or soy, nor is there anything to look at. There's another farm, and there's a farm, and there's a haystack. There's nothing there. So what do? You just get bored. So eventually say, are we there yet? That's what ends up happening. That was the Misonin. The Gemara says, what was the real issue? The real issue is they were complaining. They complained. We want to be done with this traveling. We want to be in Eretz Yisrael already. We're tired of this. They started that by Har Sinai. As soon as they left, they started complaining. That's the pshat why we asked about the second Paranos first. Because the second Paranos was the real punishment. The first Paranos was just following that second punishment. That was the idea behind it. But the Chassam Sofer said something else. Anybody know what a nun is in Aramaic? A nuna, specifically in Aramaic. It's a fish Yoshua ben Nun, there's a famous medrash about Yoshua being from a fish. That's another thing for another time. But a whole Yonah story where he's swallowed by a big fish. Very, very similar to what happened to Yonah. But Nun is always a fish. There's a medrash rabba. I'm sure you all know this. Tzadi Zion, I'm sure it was on planet Earth also. Tzadi Zion, Halacha Gimel, in the Medrash Rabba says that when it rains, fish open up their mouths to swallow the rain from the heavens. They put their mouths above the water and swallow up the rain from the heavens because it's sweeter water. Sweeter water, it helps them drink. Now, I'm sure there are fish that do that. Not too many fish will do that. Most fish will stay inside the sea. But there are fish that end up doing that. Why? Because they know the difference between the water down here on earth and the water from Shemayim. They understand the difference between sweetened water that comes from the heavens and between the water that's salty that's right over here. When Bnei Yisrael left Har Sinai, they did the exact opposite of what a fish would do. A fish wants more water. And if it can find more water, it gets it no matter where it can get it from, which means a fish always looks for as much as it can get. Bnei Yisrael should look for as much Torah as they can get. So they'll keep searching and trying to get more and more Torah. And of course, that's the pshat behind the 50s, the backwards nun. They turned around what a fish would do by running away from Har Sinai and turning their backs on Har Sinai. They're saying, God, we don't want any more mitzvos. Don't give us anything more. And they ran. They ran as far as they could. That's the exact opposite of what a fish could do, what a fish would do. That's the concept behind it. Okay, so let's go into the mun now. The mun could taste like anything you wanted it to taste like. Anybody know what the mun actually tasted like? Say you didn't think anything. Think of anything. You didn't think of anything when you ate the mun. So what did the mun taste like? Great, right? Look like a little fluffy white thing. So you're just that little fluffy white thing. You ever eaten a cloud? Bet you have. I bet you've been in a fog before. It's not much. Which one? Usually there's only one. Cumulus clouds. You get maybe a cirrus once in a while. You know, what are those like? What does mun taste like? So the pasuk seems to say it's like kitzpichus advash, which means a little bit of honey. That's nice, nice and sweet, right? Chafetz Chaim was asked that question. Chafetz Chaim turned to the people that were sitting by him and said, you know what the mun tasted like when he didn't think about anything? Nothing. Ruchnius has no taste. Spirituality doesn't have anything. You can't taste anything in it. Chafetz Chaim, I'm sorry? I don't know, what does water taste like?
Water.
What would water taste like? The Be'erus Miriam, by the way, should have tasted like any drink. That's a medrash as well. So I would think that liquids wouldn't apply to the mun. I would think it would only be solids, and it's only some type of a solid. But what did it taste like? Did it taste like something sweet or not?
There's somebody blocked in has been triple parked in the lot. If anybody drives either a Toyota Sienna K486514 or a Toyota Camry H749418.
I think it's mine because I have a Camry. I don't know what my license
plate is.
856. Oh, that's true. Thank you. You know what I do. We're good. That is good. That worked out really, really well. Thank you. That was much, much better. Plus, I hate being very embarrassed. That would be very, very, very bad. Okay, either way, but that was the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says that the mun didn't taste like anything whatsoever. The Kedushas Levi says, you know, you can only taste in the mun what you've already tasted. If you've never tasted, I don't know, like a cheeseburger before. You've never had a cheeseburger. I mean, you've had like the slice of life cheeseburger and you almost threw up. But aside from that, but you've never had a cheeseburger before, right? If you've never had a cheeseburger, you can't imagine what the cheeseburger tastes like. So if you have the mun, you know, a cheeseburger, it won't taste like anything because it's not there. There's nothing there. The Kedushas Levi says that there's a difference between, I think we all understand this, between salted and shechted meat and non-kosher meat. Meat that's not kosher. There's a big difference between the two, and one that one tastes like salty and one does not taste like salt whatsoever. It's a very plain taste. I, again, never had it, so I can't tell you. That's one of the things that I'm happy about. But it's supposed to be something very, very different. They all had not kosher meat when they were in Egypt. But they never had kosher meat. They never had the salted meat that was there. So they said the following. They said, we want to eat meat. Mi achilenu basar. Who's going to give us fresh, shechted meat for us to be able to have for ourselves so that we can put that taste into the mun? We don't know what that tastes like. We know what not kosher meat tastes like. We don't want to taste that anymore. We want kosher meat. And we don't have that whatsoever. Zachlenu is a doga. We remember the fish. We can put fish inside the mun. But we don't remember the meat. We want this. We want the meat. You know what else did level? Yeah?
Didn't they have animals? They could just...
100%. They weren't allowed to shecht animals for themselves. They could bring korbanos, but they were not allowed to shecht animals just just for themselves. It's in Parshas Re'eh. You're not allowed to shuck any animal for themselves. And that's why, even though they have tons of sheep and goats and everything like that, they could only bring korbanos. They were only allowed to bring that. And that's the reason why they wouldn't know the difference between that.
Well, I still don't know why did they get punished?
Why did they get punished for this? Yeah. It's still a tithe that they didn't need. It's like, you know, like you have everything you need and the mung still tastes like it. Okay, so it's not exactly the meat. You don't need the meat. That's really the reason why. I'm sorry? Shlomim's were questions where were you allowed to bring it on your own in the Midbar? Obviously, they could have when they came to the Mishkan when it went to Eretz Yisrael. But in the Midbar, were you allowed to just bring a sacrifice just them? They could read the Korban Pesach that they had, but that was something different, right? They had a little bit of a goat or a little bit of a sheep, but they wanted cow meat, and they couldn't get cow meat. They weren't able to get that. So the Kedushas Levi says, you know what we're going to eat Lasad Leva in the future? Kedushas Levi brings down the Chagiga, Gemara Chagiga, Yud Beis Am Abiz. The Gemara Chagiga says there's a sky called Shechakim. There are seven heavens. One of them is called Shechakim. Shechakim is where mun is ground up. I don't know how you make mun, but it's ground up from the clouds. And according to the Bach, it's there for the tzaddikim to eat in the future when Mashiach comes. That's according to the Bach. And Chagiga Yud Beis Am Abiz. Yalkut Shimoni, Yechezkel, in Shin Lamed Tes, brings down the exact same thing. That the food that we're going to eat, Lasad Leva v'Mashiach, is the mun. Rabbeinu Bachya brings down the following in Bereishis, in Pasuk Chafalov, he brings down the Levyasan. He says, you know what the purpose of Levyasan is? And Lasad Leva, we all know that when Mashiach comes, Hashem's going to take out the Levyasan and shecht it and feed us from the Levyasan. We're going to eat from the Shor Habar, which is this wild ox, which is supposed to be this awesome wild ox that's there. We're supposed to eat these bar avzos, these geese that are very, very, very fat, that they leak with oil. It's got to be pretty awesome. And Yayin Meshomer, this wine that's supposed to be unbelievable. Yayin Meshomer, it's wine that has been waiting to be drunk from the 6 days of creation. That's got to be pretty awesome. That's our meal when Mashiach comes. Rabbeinu Bachya says, what's the shot? No. 5772. I would assume it's 5,772 years old. I would assume.
That's probably the oldest known bottle of wine.
I would assume that they're, I have one in my basement, but I'm pretty sure it's only 12 years old. I have to check, though. I'm almost positive. But the Rabbeinu Bachya says, it's the last physical pleasure that we're ever going to have. That's what's going to happen. Mashiach's going to come, and boom, we're going to be given these awesome meals. We're going to sit down and we're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And you're going to sit there, you're going to have this awesome meat and everything. And from then on, there's not going to be any more physical eating. It's only going to be the month. I'm sorry?
How about different arayas?
Arayas. That'll be gone. Baruch Hashem.
I'm just saying that.
Just remember that this was very connected with Bocha Lemishpul itself. When they're asking for the meat, they also were crying that they weren't able to marry Arias. They were punished for both of those things. I'm just going to point that out for you.
I assume that's also related. 100%.
Very much so. And it seems like that'll be elsewhere as well. But it's there to prepare ourselves for the future Ruchnias. When we eat the mun, in order to eat the mun, you got to have a taste. So God gives us the greatest tasting foods and drinks that there are in the world. And then gives us the mun. He prepares us that we can eat in the mun, have anything we want within the mun itself. That's the shot behind it. That's the idea behind what we're going to have. So I'll ask you something. If the mun was to make things easier for them so they could learn more and they'd be able to do more mitzvos, why in the world did they have to walk outside of their house to go get it in the field? Why wouldn't it just, I don't know, grow on a tree outside of their house or grow from their living room ceiling? Why wouldn't that happen? If they're living under clouds anyway.
There was going to come a point in time where they were going to need to be responsible for their own food again.
Very, very good. Very, very good. I like that. I mean, you have to work somewhat. You have to work somewhat, right? Okay, you're right, but it seems that the mun took them away from the punishment of others because they didn't have to work the ground for it. Seems like they were now being rewarded for not having it. But you're right, they still have to do something. Chassam Sofer says an unbelievable answer. He says, it's like a chassan who gets married to a caliph who's very, very wealthy. And he's sitting there and he's eating by his father-in-law's table. And he wants to work, he wants whatever, but he's not going to be able to afford it just yet. And he's eating by his father-in-law's table and he feels like a nebuch, taking away from his father-in-law, where he's like, he's not doing anything whatsoever. But if the father-in-law goes ahead and says, you know what, why don't you help us make this dinner? Or why don't you go out and go grab the groceries or something like that? If the son-in-law feels like he's part of it, and then part of the whole meal and involved in making the meal, then it doesn't seem as nebuchy. I know we're living in a generation where if you can get it for free, take it. take it. And anything that you can get, you just grab. And you say, like, yeah, that's my, that, I don't have to work for it. As long as I don't have to work for it, then it's all good. I realize it's the generation we're in. But imagine, if you could, if you will, that this would be a better situation. That's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing. Exactly what you're saying. You still have to work somewhat. It's not just to be able to just give everything. It's still embarrassing to do that. You have to work somewhat. You have to do something. That's the pshat behind it. Okay, let's end with this. Miriam said, does Hashem only speak to Moshe? Harak ach b'Moshe Dibar Hashem. Does Kodesh Baruch Hu only speak to Moshe? Halo gam banu Dibar Hashem. But God speaks to us as well. Shazak Samsover, that's a little bit of extra words that did not need to be said. That didn't need to be said. Number one. That's number one. Number two. What the? Are you serious, Miriam? You don't see the difference between you and Moshe Rabbeinu? You don't see the difference between your Nebuah and Moshe Rabbeinu's Nebuah? You don't see that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, disappeared for 40 days and 40 nights, came back down, smashed the Luchos, went back up again for 40 days and 40 nights, then went back up a third time, 40 days and 40 nights. You don't see a difference between you and Moshe, in which you can remain with your husband and he has to separate from his wife? You can't see any difference between them? I mean, come on. How could that be? How did Miriam not see a difference between them? Says the Chassam Sofer, there's a level of Eish and Mayim when it comes to Kedusha. Eish Das Lamo is the level of learning Torah. That learning Torah should be like a fire within you. While Mayim, water, should stand for Gemilas Chesed. Doing Chesed and doing the right thing. Mayim was what the Avos did. Avram Avinu, right? Avram Avinu is well known for Chesed. While Eish was pure Moshe Rabbeinu. Here's what Miriam and Aaron thought. Miriam and Aaron thought that you need to have both. And if you don't have both, then it's never going to work. Moshe was the Torah. They understood that. But they were the Mayim. They were the Chesed. Moshe and Aaron. Miriam and Aaron, I'm sorry. So Miriam and Aaron said, I don't understand. You think Moshe Rabbeinu just needs himself and that's it? He couldn't make the world run just by himself. He doesn't have Chesed. He needs me. He needs you, Aaron. So why is he different from both of us? Both of us. We're equal to him in that way. We're Mayim. He's Eish. There's differences between Mayim and Eish. I understand there's differences, but we're both equal. So why is he treating himself differently? There's a Gemara in Shabbos that goes through the Aleph Beis. And it says, the kids used to darshan out the Aleph Beis, and they said the following. Aleph Beis. Aluf Bayis. Bina, they said. That if a person learns, then they gain understanding. That's Aluf Bina. Gimel Dalid is Gomel Dalin. You should give to the poor. You should give money to the poor. If you do that, Hey Vav. Then the Hey and Vav of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is together with you. And then you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And then Zion Ches, which means he zanis you, he gives you food, he gives you chesed, and it goes on, and goes on throughout the entire alphabet. Said Miriam, Aluf Bina means to learn Torah. Who represented learning Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu. Gomel Dalin, doing chesed. Who represents doing chesed?
Aaron.
That's Aaron and Miriam. So we do one part, he does the other part, and what comes after that? Hey Vav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Says Chassam Sofer. What happened to the Yod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name? Now granted, the Hey, maybe you could say it's doubled up, whatever it is. What happened to the Yod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name? Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Combine the letters together. Aleph plus Beis is 3, plus Gimel is 6, plus Dalet is 10. There's the Yod. The Hey, and then the Vav. If you do the Aleph Beis and the Gimel and the Dalid, you come out with the Yod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, and then you'll end up coming out with the Hay and the Vav, and that'll end up being you have all the Shemos together, and that's how we understood. Listen to the words of Miriam again. Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem. You ready for this? Harak, first letter is?
Hey.
Ach, first letter is Aleph. B'Moshe, Beis. Diber is Dalid. And then comes Hashem. He's missing the Gomel. He's missing the Chesed. He said he's missing something. Aleph Beis Dalet Hey is the word Aveda. He's missing something. In order for him to connect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he needs something. He needs Chesed. And in order for him to get Chesed, he needs us. Why, how do I know that we have Chesed? Halo Gam Banu Diber. Hello is Hey, Gam is Gimel, Banu is Beis, Diber is Dalet. Hey, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. What was she missing? The Aleph, which is the learning. She didn't have the aluf. She didn't have the learning. She didn't have the Torah. And neither did Aaron. They didn't have that. But together we're able to bring the Shekhinah. That's what she was saying. She was saying he's missing something and we can fulfill that need. That's what ends up happening over here. So why is he acting differently from us? But she was wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Gomel Chassadim there could possibly be. Who else would give us money for 40 years in the middle of the desert? That's what he stood for. That's the Pshat on Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gave his whole life to Klal Yisrael. He gave up his wife. He gave up his kids. He gave up everything he knew to help out Klal Yisrael. Nobody was a bigger Gomel Chassadim than Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody gave of themselves more than Moshe Rabbeinu did. That's the Gemilas Chassadim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Miriam, you think he needs you? That's wrong. You and Aaron come nowhere near Moshe Rabbeinu. You don't understand what kind of Gemilas Chassadim Moshe Rabbeinu does. He does include the Gemil. That's the Pshat. According to Chassam Sofer, the difference between you and him. We're going to stop with that, guys. We'll have a great show.